Hello, welcome to Filmmakers Uncut, the podcast bringing you leading industry filmmakers and photographers to help you grow your skill. Today, I'm here with Andrew. How you doing, Andrew?
Hi, I'm doing well. Nice to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for coming. I usually like to start off by, you letting people know kind of what you do. So just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Well, it depends which day you ask me and which office I'm sitting in. The answer might, vary a little bit. I kind of wear two hats in sort of the creative industries. One, which is the hat I've been wearing the longest, is as an independent television producer here in Toronto. I started producing. My first series I produced was around 2004. And it was a scripted sketch comedy series. And since then, I've been producing scripted comedies, including shows, Schitt's Creek behind me, Son of a Critch on CBC, Jan on Bell Media, Kids in the Hall on Amazon, to name a few. So I continue to do that at my company, Project 10. We spend a lot of time focusing on developing new projects, working closely with broadcasters, working closely with creators to sort of find shows that we think can find audiences around the world. The other hat that I wear is as an educator. I work as the president of Toronto Film School here in Toronto as well. And that's a role that I've had for about a year and a half. I've been affiliated and working with Toronto Film School for 5.5 years now, but my role has evolved and changed, and now I continue to look for ways to connect Toronto Film School to industry, to create and find opportunities for our graduates to make sure that the training they're receiving is world class and relevant and ready to transition well from the classroom to a professional set, and really support students as they build their foundations for success in the creative industries. So that's kind of me in a nutshell. I do a lot of travel for work. I split my time between Toronto and LA, making sure that those relationships are strong. This really is a global industry, and I spend a lot of time making sure that the company and the school are moving in the right direction and understand the responsibilities that go along with that in a global industry.
That's awesome. It seems like you have a lot of things on your plate, which really makes sense for a producer, because producers always have a lot on their plate, right?
Well, definitely being a producer has equipped me to deal with lots of spinning plates, so.
Right, exactly. For people who might not know what an executive producer is, would you be able to, let them know what exactly you do?
Sure. I mean, executive producer can have different definitions for different people. So I kind of live in my own definition. Executive producer for me is somebody who works very closely with the creative side of the business, with writers, showrunners, creators, actors. That's on one side of the business. And then on the other side is the business side of the business, which is dealing with buyers like broadcasters and distributors and studios, dealing with banks when it comes to borrowing money, working with agents and lawyers and accountants and all that. So I kind of live in two worlds. And for me, the responsibility of an executive producer is to really marry the two, to figure out how ways to create business and economics around creative ideas and creative teams, and then figuring out ways to work with broadcasting partners, distribution partners to find audiences for those ideas.
Very cool. And I know there's always the confusion between an executive producer and a producer. Is there a difference, you would say?
Yeah, the producer, again, people have different definitions, but for me, a producer is really somebody who's you know, on the set, getting their hands dirty, really involved in the day-to-day operations of a production. I don't spend a lot of time on set. My job is really, you know, a desk job. It's emails, it's phone calls, it's meetings, it's that sort of thing. It's how do we push the bigger pieces forward? I just make sure that we hire the right team to make sure that they're delivering on the vision that all the creative stakeholders have agreed to. So the producer is really kind of on the ground, you know, making sure things are moving in the right direction. And that's a relationship that, you know, I make sure I'm in very close contact with our producers when they're in production.
Very cool. It seems like you've been in the game for a very, very long time. Did you always realize that you wanted to be in this type of role, or did you try out different roles to begin with and kind of, you know, get into actually producing?
I don't know if it's very, very long time, but I've been
20 years.
I've been there for 20 years. This is something I always wanted to do. I always had an entrepreneurial spirit, an entrepreneurial drive. And I got a lot of joy out of the creative side of really, comedy was something that spoke to me very early on. And it was something I was a passionate consumer of. I loved stand-up, I loved sketch. And as I kind of thought and also kind of realized that there were careers in television in Canada, and there were ways to get training to pursue those careers, I really looked at ways to marry those interests. So sort of what is that, how could I marry entrepreneurship and love of television and films and comedy? What would that look like? And I really spent a lot of time going to school, but thinking and working and volunteering, trying to find ways to connect those dots. It took a long time. It was very stressful, and there were ups and downs, and you know, there were a lot of relationships that had to be built and maintained. And I just had a very specific sort of focus on what I wanted to do and a commitment to doing it. I definitely didn't know how to do it. There weren't a lot of real mentors in sort of the independent production, specifically comedy space, as I was going through it. So I kind of had to chart my own path a little bit.
Right. And it's good hearing that, you know, you really worked hard to get where you are, because a lot of people think everyone who's successful is just like an overnight success.
No, it's not. It really took, listen, you can ask my parents how long it took too. Like they were very supportive, but at the same time, they didn't, and not just my parents, my friends and people that I knew and relatives and this sort of thing. I think it was very hard to fully grasp that, this would turn into a career, just because it's so elusive, and there's not a lot of people who do it. It's very risky. You can't just go to school and become a comedy producer. So it did take a lot of effort, and it really wasn't until, I'm going to say, like the first or second season of Spun Out, which is a series we produced for CTV in, I think, 2014, 2015, where it finally felt like, okay, there's something here. I was sort of starting to build a foundation for a real career. You think about that, that's 15 years after I graduated from Ryerson's Radio and Television Arts program. So it really was just grinding it out and hustling and trying to figure out ways to work with people I wanted to work with, and putting myself in very uncomfortable situations in the sense that I didn't have the confidence to do things. I had to learn how to do things. It really, nothing was handed to me. I didn't come from a family who who had any connectivity to film and television or comedy. I went to high school in Halifax, Nova Scotia. There really wasn't a television industry there at the time. There really wasn't a comedy scene there at the time. It was just sort of this passion that wasn't connected to anything, you know, physical, that really drew me to this career.
Interesting. Very interesting. I think that was like a lot of good advice for people to really hear out. And obviously, you know, Schitt's Creek was a huge, huge opportunity for you. How did that end up landing in your lab?
Well, it was after the first season of Spun Out, and I worked very hard to get Spun Out going, and it was a very challenging show to keep on the rails. It was a prime time half hour multicam comedy series. Multicams hadn't been done in Canada probably in about 30 or 40 years, so we had to figure out how to build that infrastructure, how to finance it. The financing was very challenging. I lost, you know, months of sleep over that, and I was doing it really as an independent, and really kind of as one person. It was under the Project 10 banner, but really that was just code for Andrew Barnsley. And because there wasn't a real corporate infrastructure at all. I was really the only person there or here at the time. And I became friends with somebody who really helped on the financing side, somebody who at the time was running a bank that specialized in production lending. And he really sort of took me under his wing, spent a lot of time kind of training me on how you put pieces together and the risks involved and kind of what the options were. And, you know, he kind of saw how serious I took it, how hard I worked. And he was sort of, for, you know, he was a real pillar of the industry in Toronto and Canada. And after we finished production on Spun Out, we went out socially. It was the first time we ever went out socially. And this is sort of a long story short, but sort of towards the end of our time together that evening, he was like, "Hey, do you think you could take on another series?" And I was like, "Yeah, I mean, that this was a lot of work. It took a lot out of me, but I now feel I have the team in place. I feel I have the systems in place that I can do that. It wouldn't be nearly as hard doing it the second time." He's like, "Okay, well, that's great." He's like, "I have a friend I'd like to introduce you to. His name's Eugene Levy, and he has a show that he's pitching called Schitt's Creek." And that's really kind of how it happened. It was 1 year of Spun Out. Somebody in a more senior capacity with more experience and reach and expertise, kind of recognizing that I had something to offer and willing to connect the dots on a relationship that really has changed, you know, my career and my life and really, you know, powerful ways.
That's insane. It literally gave me like feels right there, because it's like that whole story. It's you've worked so hard to get to a point, and that one connection, you know, really, really pushes you into a new place that you've never been before.
And I wasn't expecting it either. It really was a surprise. And I think kind of the lesson there is you never know where opportunities are going to come from. You have to be open to all of it. Sort of another lesson on top of that, which is really the same story, is after Spun Out was a really tricky show, and it took 4 years to put together and to finally get our first season in the can. And at the end of the first season, I remember being at the wrap party, and everybody knew kind of the how challenging it was for me and just how hard it was and how all-consuming. And at the wrap party, somebody came up to me and said, "You know, Andrew, you did it. Like, you actually got this produced." I can only imagine that you're going to take time off and, you know, maybe take, you know, 6 months off and catch your breath and, you know, and re-energize. And I was like, no, in fact, the opposite. I've actually done something that people have noticed. I don't know if this will ever happen again. I have to work twice as hard as I've ever had to work, as I've ever worked, to make sure that I don't capitalize on this opportunity and what's been created here. And that's really kind of that spirit and that mindset is kind of what really what positioned me really well for opportunities like Schitt's Creek.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Very cool lesson. What's the most important lesson you've learned over your career, you think?
Well, it's just the importance of relationships. And I think the importance of genuine relationships. It can be very dangerous going into a professional relationship, wanting to get something out of it. That I think it's just important to connect with people, to find like-minded people that you will support, that will support you, that you'll invest in and they'll invest in, and just not have any expectations or any pressure. As you get older and your career gets older, the relationships evolve and grow, and it actually all happens organically if you let it happen. And that was sort of a surprise for me. I was just kind of being me, and I like people, and I like, you know, being around like-minded people that are passionate and are, you know, like to do big and interesting things. And what happened is it just presented opportunities, and some worked, some didn't, some really did, some really didn't. But that's just all part of kind of the ride. But it all comes down to relationships. And that's relationships are what's going to get you out of trouble. If you find yourself painted into a professional corner, or it's like, I always wanted to be able to know who to call when I got into a challenging situation. The other thing that's sort of part of that too, I never wanted to know everything. This was something that I kind of decided early on. I never wanted to know everything, but I wanted to know the experts who I could reach out to help me and advise me on things. I kind of talk sometimes about how I really never want to be the smartest person in the room. I want to be surrounded by people that lift me up. I just think if I walk into a room thinking I'm the smartest or the most successful or whatever it is, that can only go downhill. I really want to surround myself with people who inspire me, who I can learn from, who can advise me, who can make me laugh, who can point me in the right direction, that sort of thing.
I love that. I love that a lot. I think my biggest takeaway there was, you know, when you're building relationships, people not always expecting something from them, right? Because exactly. A lot of people these days will go into relationships and do something for that person, but then they expect them to give it back to them. And once they don't receive it back, they're like, well, maybe he's not my friend, maybe this and that, right? And it really destroys that relationship in the long-term sense, right? So if you're always able to give the most amount of value in your relationship, that's where, you know, your relationships will grow and people will see you doing that as well.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
This question is a little bit similar. It's what is one piece of advice do you give to someone starting out in their career? Someone who's, you know, very new, fresh, maybe, you know, just came out of film school. What would be that piece of advice you would give them?
I think the most important thing, and sometimes this is tough because people don't know, but I really think the most important advice is to have a sense of where you want to be in the future. Have a sense of where you want to be 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 15 years from now. The reason that's so important is that it forces you to make your decisions, your everyday decisions, with that in mind. And you know, when you're excuse me, when even when you're deciding, you know, small things, big things, if you can anchor those decisions to something in the future instead of just answering questions in the present, it will kind of help steer you in the direction you want to go to. An example of that is, you know, when I went to, after I graduated from Ryerson and radio and television arts, I really wanted to get into television production, and I was looking at ways to do it, but I also needed to pay the rent, and I didn't have, you know, there wasn't really money coming in. I was looking for freelance opportunities, that sort of thing. And I started to see that a lot of my friends and fellow graduates were taking jobs that weren't in kind of in the field that they studied or where their passions were. And the problem with that, and that was something I decided I just wasn't going to do. I would sacrifice more if I had to, or figure out ways to, you know, take on very short gigs or something like this. But I was seeing people really compromising or sacrificing their passions and their dreams because they were answering they're answering questions in the present, and basically not understanding that if you take a job that isn't or commit to a job, a long-term job that's, or even a, you know, a shorter-term job that takes you off your course, there's a very good chance you'll stay off that course. Or if you do take it and you realize, you know, you do it for 5 years, which 5 years can fly by very quickly, and you realize you've been off course for 5 years, it's tough to get back on course. So it's having a sense of, you know, where you want to go, where you want to end up, who, you know, the type of people you want to work with and be surrounded by, and anchoring decisions to that, your everyday decisions to it. And I just think that's a way to it's really about staying on track and being pointed in the direction you want to go.
Really good advice. Foresee your future. Mm-hmm. What do you wish your younger self knew about your current profession?
Well, it's actually an interesting question, because sometimes I look back at my younger self and I'm very surprised at how wise my younger self was. Even things like I just said, like, you know, stay focused. Like, somehow I knew this stuff, and I would make decisions. I wouldn't, you know, like I wouldn't let money make a decision for me. That was something I said to myself. And I look back, it's like, why? Like, that's probably not how I would answer things now. But somehow when I was in my, you know, late teens, early 20s, I had this sense that I was so focused on getting somewhere and having a sense of where I wanted to go, that I was very committed to this set of principles or philosophies that I don't know where that came from. Like, it's really kind of fun for me to think about. But I guess, you know, I guess one of the things that I maybe could have thought a bit more about, and I really didn't think about it at the time, and maybe I didn't need to, just considering the way things have turned out, but I really focused on Canada for really the first 15 years of my career, and I didn't really view Canada's domestic sort of television industry as having any real global reach. And I didn't know how, I had to learn very quickly how to play in that arena. I just think that's something in the first 15 years of my career after I graduated, I could have been thinking a bit differently about what is a connection to Los Angeles, what is a connection to London, that sort of thing. But, and maybe that would have accelerated things a little bit. I don't know. I find it hard to imagine that it would have, but I just wasn't thinking globally until really kind of the beginning of Schitt's Creek.
Right. I know you're very closely involved with the Toronto Film School, of course. What's your take on school itself? You know, would you recommend it to someone? How do you see it?
Well, I'm very pro school. And I'll tell you a couple things. One, I went to school for a long time. That I really felt I needed a foundation in, like, an educational foundation to achieve what I wanted to do. I went to university for a long time. It's almost embarrassing to say I have two BAs. I have a Bachelor of Education degree. I have a Bachelor of Applied Arts degree, and I have an MA. So I was in school for a long time, and really so much of it was to look at how to become a producer from as many different angles as possible. Being in school gave me the opportunity to take some risks, to try things that I might not try otherwise. I produced a feature film in my master's program. I produced, short television projects at Radio and Television Arts. And it was such a wonderful place to learn, to make mistakes, to also, it gave me the freedom to explore things outside of school, because I just had the safety of school, so I could go and I could volunteer, I can meet people. So it just provided, school provided so many opportunities, both inside and outside of the classroom. But the other, and the skills too that went along with it. And I think here's one thing that I do know too, is nobody's going to look at what degree you have. Nobody's going to look at what diploma you have. If you want to be a producer, a director, if you want to be a grip, a DOP, they're just, you want to work in wardrobe or hair. It just, nobody's going to look at that. But what they will look at is the skill set that you bring to your job, the attitude that you bring to the job, the understanding of the culture of the industry and set that you bring to the job. And these are all things that you learn in school. At Toronto Film School, we pride ourselves on a couple of things. One is that our students are set ready the second they graduate. They understand the culture, they understand the hierarchy, they understand the operational side of a set, and they're able to transition seamlessly to that. That doesn't happen without school. It just doesn't. Also, in a school, you get access to, experienced and expert professionals. At Toronto Film School, all of our faculty are part-time faculty, which really separates us from other film schools. And the reason for that is part-time. If they're part-time faculty, it means they're working probably full-time professionally as in their chosen professions in their career. So what that does is it brings current skills, current understanding into the classroom, but it also brings their relationships and their understanding of the industry and the professions in the classroom, and students gain from that. So school for me, it's not necessarily about the piece of paper you get at the end of it, although that is really nice and parents like that. It's about what you learn, the skills, the understanding, the culture, the relationships. All of those are moments for opportunity to build careers.
Right. Well said. Yeah, it's definitely very, very, I would say, like, person depending. There's obviously many people who haven't gone to school, and many people who have gone to school. But, a few things I have seen from people and friends who I have actually had go to Toronto Film School, like we were talking about before this, is that when they do come out, they are very, like, set proficient. Like, they're able to do the call outs, like, everything you need, which I didn't go to school personally. And, when I saw that, I was like, oh, that's what we're supposed to do on a set,
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And I mean, you're figuring it out. So it's somewhere, it is sort of a way to kind of fast track sometimes is, and at Toronto Film School, the programs are designed to be very short. There are six terms, which at most schools, that would be over 3 years. But at Toronto Film School, it's six terms over 18 months. So you're in and you're out and you're set ready very quickly.
Very cool. Very cool. I like that a lot. What are you currently working on these days? I know you kind of talked about where, you know, you have your company, which I kind of want to get into as well. You said you guys bring in ideas through your company and try to help people get their film and television shows out there. So if you can tell us like a little bit about that and what you're currently working on as well, that would be great.
Sure. So kind of how it works is there's seven of us who work in this office, and really, you know, when you think about what a production company is, you're really a development company. And what that means is you're really focused on what's next. Once you get something, there is a lot of work to getting something going and, you know, putting financing together and building teams and that sort of thing. But you know, that can kind of take care of itself. But where the real work is finding out and exploring what your next projects are. So we here at Project 10, we have a team that focuses on creative development and working with creative teams that come in. So we don't generate any of our own ideas. We work closely with agents who will put writers and creators in front of us with ideas. If we like them, like the ideas, and we like the team that's assembled around them, we'll talk about what kind of resource we want to put behind a project. Particularly if that's informed by, you know, our market intelligence, like what we're hearing from the buyers. If something comes through the door, it's a good team, a good idea, we have a sense we can sell it. That's when we get excited and start thinking about what that can look like. So we keep a pretty strong development slate. At any given moment, we probably have, you know, five or six pitches ready, one or two pitches out, and maybe a half dozen shows and pitches that are either on the back burner or they're making their way through the process. And the idea is that these are shows we pitch to buyers. We hope to get some development money and some development interest for scripts or any other sort of creative material that makes sense. And then if the buyer is interested, they like the work that we've done in development, they'll then consider it for a production order. And it is a bit of a game of numbers too. You know, we're pretty good at getting series ordered for a relatively small company. But for every show we get ordered, we probably have 10 shows in development. For every 10 shows in development, we probably, you know, pitched 100 shows. So it really, we have to think like on that kind of scale and with that, the realities of those types of numbers. So right now we're working with some great creators in Canada and the US to kind of find what we hope will be sort of our next big project. But on the production side, we did three seasons of the series Jan with Jan Arden. We just finished a special that's going to air this week on CTV. We are presently delivering the second season of Son of a Critch on CBC and CBC Gem, which goes to air early January. We produced Kids in the Hall, which is on Amazon. So we're trying to figure out ways to keep that going. And then on top of that, I'm also working closely with our international partners. So all of those shows have either international distributors who represent it around the world or a studio that is represented around the world. So we make sure that those shows continue to get attention, that they're finding audiences. And so we're working with our international partners to make sure that that all those pieces are moving forward. So there's a lot on the go, but most of our focus is on development. Production is a big piece, and our focus there is on sort of financing, building teams, making sure we're hitting a quality control, we're quality standard that we're happy with, and further through the lifespan of a series, its distribution to make sure that, you know, we're maximizing audience potential around the world.
Very cool. I really like the, I want to get into like a little bit more about the pitching process, I would say. When you guys do get pitched, first off, what do you guys typically look for when someone is pitching to you guys to bring, you know, their idea forward? Firstly, and secondly, when you guys go to pitch, how are you guys pitching, you know, to be able to get funding for these projects?
So we're pretty specific on what we're looking for. And I think that's sort of the sign of a good company. It's a company that knows who they are, what they want to be, and where they want to go. So our focus is really on half hour comedies. We also tend to, because we're very good at kind of maintaining relationships with talent and high profile talent, we tend to look for shows that have a piece of talent attached, which doesn't mean that we're closed to not having that piece there, but it definitely, we treat it a bit differently if we think that would help sell it. I'm trying to remember the question.
It was difficult. So it was a two-part question. So pretty much like when someone's coming to you guys, what are you looking for? Trying to give you the idea. And then on your guys' end, when you guys are pitching for to get a budget or, you know, money, like how are you guys pitching it on that end?
Okay. Yes. Yeah. So like I said, we have a real sense of what we're looking for. It's half hour comedies, half hour scripted comedies. If there is a piece of talent attached, that's great. Not necessary. But what is really important is we really look for and get excited about a very specific sensibility, something that nobody else can deliver. So this is why comedy is so great. Stand-up comedy can be a great place to mine from because it's really one person's point of view. So what we like is where something is so specific in time and place and sensibility and sense of humor that it's undeniable that there's no competition out there because this is the only show that will exist like this. And what we've kind of discovered is the more specific you get in a show, the more universal it actually comes. It's very, it's almost paradoxical that way. And we've seen it with, you know, we see it very clearly with Son of a Critch. So that's a show, Mark Critch was a piece of talent. He brought this to us. It was based on a memoir that he wrote about growing up in St. John's, Newfoundland in the early to mid 80s. I mean, you can't get any more specific than that. But what we discovered is it just resonated with all types of people. It's about belonging. It's about family. It's about adolescence and growing up and first loves and all these things that, you know, were so specific to Mark and Mark's story. But as humans, we can relate. And, you know, it's also a show that has three generations of characters in it. And that just pulls family together. And, you know, that's really like, that's a slam dunk. And when we heard that pitch, we were like, okay, this is exactly what we're looking for. So it's something that there's confidence in the creator. There's confidence in the storytelling. When you ask a question about the world or the character to the person pitching, they just know it because it's so who they are and ideally they've lived it. So it's very, very, deep and confident specificity. That's sort of the first thing we look for. We also, you know, look for comedy that has a purpose. We do feel a responsibility to make sure we're putting good out into the world. And, you know, you certainly have seen that with, you know, Schitt's Creek and where sort of some of the issues that are tackled there around identity and sexuality and family and class and sort of thing. You look at Jan, which got into aging and feminism and all sorts of important things that we want to look at, and Son of a Critch gets into, you know, race and identity, and these, like, we want to be able to talk about things, and comedy is very special that way. And we sometimes talk about how comedy can Trojan horse ideas. It makes it very, you can tackle big ideas in very palatable ways and almost catch people off guard where they're thinking about things that they might not necessarily think about, and comedy just does it in a delicate way. So we take the power of comedy pretty responsibly. We have a bit of a motto here. It's comedy with purpose on purpose is kind of how we approach it. So that's kind of, in a very broad sense, what we look for. In terms of actually pitching, you know, when we pitch, we tend to work very closely with the creators, getting the team right, getting the pitch right, making sure the material is where it needs to be. But when we're actually in the room, whether it's a physical room or a Zoom room, we kind of just let the creators do the talking. We set it up a little bit, but basically the context we put around it normally is just, this is an idea that spoke to us. You know, we have, you know, relatively high standards of what we get excited about. And this team and this idea check those boxes. And this is something we want to invest in, and we hope you will too. And then we hand it over to the creators to just kind of talk about their world, talk about their connection to it, talk about why it's important. And hopefully, you know, we get a buyer to buy a couple scripts at the end of the call.
Very cool. Yeah, it seems like, you know, at the end of the day, you guys are coming in as a reputable company, right? And you've had shows like on your back. So once you're bringing someone in, it's, you let them be themselves and, you know, be the creator they are, right? At the end of the day. And if they like them, if they don't, then they don't, right? Yeah. It's just how it is. For obviously at the very beginning, when you guys, did you start your company before having a few successful things under your belt?
I do. Yeah. I mean, I've had a few companies. I've always really worked for myself, and I've had different partners. This one, Project 10, has been around since 2009. So it's obviously the longest. But when I was doing my master's degree, I started a production company, and I worked with a partner, and I worked with somebody who's about 10 years older than me. She was an experienced showrunner, writer, very talented. And I just found that I could kind of be the professional yin to her professional yang, where she was really focused on the creative, and I really wanted to kind of find that entrepreneurial place for me. And the idea of elevating what she was doing just made so much sense. And so we started a company before I graduated with my master's degree, and somehow we worked very hard, and we had a series ordered almost immediately after I graduated. So I've kind of just been, I've actually been in this role of executive producer and business owner pretty much my whole career.
That's awesome. That's awesome to hear that, like, even though you weren't as reputable back then, right, it wasn't as easy, you were still able to, you know, get a show going then.
Yeah, I will say this though, and this is we actually partnered with an established company to get that show going. And that was really good advice we got from the broadcaster. They said, you know, we like the idea, but we would ask you to go find a company, an established company who can help you make this. And that's what we did. And it proved to be the right move. And I think that's that's another piece of advice is I was pretty stubborn and I didn't like that. And there have been some stubborn moments where it's like, it's not fair. I've worked so hard and I've have to give a bit of it, a very meaningful piece of it away. But when you do that though, you can experience that 1 + 1 = 3, where there can be a whole lot of upside to finding a partner that you want to work with, even though it might sting at the beginning. It might actually mean that you get your show made. And we do that a lot. We work with young companies that have ideas that might be looking for a company like ours who can add a bit of momentum or a bit of weight to a project. And everybody wins in that situation if it goes. So that was one thing I did need to learn, to stop being stubborn. It wasn't necessarily about control. It was just, I had a very hard time with things that I worked so hard, that I lost sleep over, that were just, impossible tasks, and just handing them over to somebody else who didn't have the history with the project. But as soon as I kind of got over that, that really helped as well.
I think that's really good advice, because a lot of people are scared to, hand over that project, usually when they've been working so hard on it, like their entire life sometimes, right?
Yeah. But if you find the right partner will get that. They'll respect that, and they'll just figure out ways for it to work for everybody.
Right. That makes sense. Since we're on this topic, like if someone was, because we get this all the time where people are like, hey, I have an idea, but, maybe I have a script, but I don't know exactly, where to go with it, right? So they try to go in like the funding route, through a telefilm, try to get funding and maybe, get an episode out possibly, but then, sometimes it doesn't always go in that route or you don't get funding. What would you recommend like to those types of people?
Yeah, I think, like a lot of my advice kind of is the same. It is about relationships and it's about people. And it's about how do you get the attention of people in organic and genuine and authentic ways. And a lot of that comes down to, really often physically putting yourself in places where those people are. So it's what are conferences you can get to? What are seminars you can get to? What are cocktail parties you can get to? It's just how do you build that network out and get to know like-minded people who are the same age as you, people that are 10 years older than you, and people that you can just kind of, learn from their mistakes, or you can share your mistakes with them. And I just think if this is like any industry, they can be pretty small and community oriented. And this is definitely that, but it's also a very, it can be a very welcoming industry too. Maybe that's the Canadian side of it, but I really see people looking to raise people up. But that comes down to genuine, authentic relationships, right? And then the task becomes how do you put yourself into situations to make those connections. And it is conferences. My career really changed when I started going to the Just for Laughs conference every year and just started to, kind of bake myself into that professional community. And, even before I started, I would go to comedy clubs and I would meet the managers and I would meet the comics and just in very kind of real ways, just get to know people. And over time, you start having conversations and you start collaborating and you start having ideas of where your career could go. And it kind of, nothing ever moves fast enough, as I'm sure you know. And, I certainly felt that when I was starting out. But then, I look now, like having done this for 20 years, things actually moved at the pace they were supposed to move. But there were days where it's just like, why isn't the phone ringing? Why aren't I getting emails? What am I doing wrong? And what can I be doing better? But all of that was just kind of how it played out, and probably rightly so.
That makes sense. I always preach like being patient, because a lot of people just want it so quickly, right? But you never know where the opportunity is going to present itself. And sometimes it just comes very randomly, which you would have never expected before.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's just putting yourself in those situations where that can happen.
Exactly. Relationships, key. And school really helps with that. I think that's one of the biggest thing. I've probably interviewed like 50 to 100 friends who are like gone to school. I'm like, what did you really learn in school? And relationships have come up a lot of times, right? Yeah, to be able to get your foot in the door, or someone from your school goes and gets hired somewhere and they're like, oh, we need this person. I know you, right? So they bring you in. Yeah, that's awesome. I am pretty much good to go. I really enjoyed this. Is there anywhere people can find you? Is there any last pieces of things you want to, you know, say? Yeah. Anything you want to advertise? Anything like that? Let it all out.
No, I mean, I really think this can be such a rewarding and wonderful and positive business, but it can also beat you up too. And it's really, I've been there. I'll be there again. I think it's just understanding that and knowing, you know, when you're pursuing your dreams or you're pursuing great big ideas, there are going to be ups and downs, and there are going to be days where it doesn't make sense and you want to quit. The real secret to all of this is not quitting. It's staying focused, staying committed, working hard, you know, not losing sight of what you want to do, trying to move one step forward every day, whether it's a big step or a small step. How do you feel progress every day towards where you want to go? But also, I think it's just important to know that it can be done. And, you know, we look at the landscape now, it's, you know, the voices that are being celebrated now, the and being elevated, and the opportunities that are being created for, you know, all sorts of people. And it's really opening up in a lovely way. And what it does come down is to believing in yourself, and, you know, having support from friends and family, and, you know, staying on the path. And like I said, it can be such a wonderful and beautiful career. And it's important to celebrate those successes, big and little, when they happen, because they don't always happen. But these are careers where, you know, there is a lot to to celebrate. And we're in the storytelling business, we're in the culture business, we're in the business of empowering people and elevating voices. And I'm very proud of the work that I've done, my teams have done, and I'm very proud of people who take the risks to pursue their dreams and to get their voices out there.
Very inspirational. I love that a lot. This has been so good. I really appreciate your time. I think this podcast will go on for centuries, and people will be able to watch it over and get great value out of it.
Amazing. Thank you for this. It was a real pleasure to talk to you. And if people want to learn more about me, they can go to project10.ca, which is our website. I also encourage people who are interested in a career in the creative industries to check out Toronto Film School. There are really interesting programs. There's a wonderful community there. And like I said, I am a believer in education. I think it will help. Those are decisions you'll have to make on your own, but it might be worth checking out. So thank you for this, Puya. It's really nice to speak with you, and congratulations on this initiative too, and good luck with everything you're doing. Yeah.
Thank you, man. Thank you. I really appreciate you. Thank you for hopping on.
My pleasure. Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Bye-bye.